I spend a good deal of time interacting with people that believe in evolution, that believe in Darwinism and in the idea of the origin of species and development of life on Earth from something primordial to the present. And I have to record something because I want to be able to send something to those who hold that position to actually interact with your idea in ways more in depth maybe than a tweet or a Facebook post or some other social media kind of interaction. And I hope that this will actually prompt some discussion, some debate. I honestly do. I want the PhDs who teach in biology Darwinism to respond. I want to deal and interact with your philosophy. That's important to do. And whether you have a PhD or not in the subject, most do not who hold to it, right? 99% of people who believe in evolution don't teach it in any sort of way in which they make a living. Just like 99% of Christians aren't pastors and aren't theologians and they believe in Christianity. It's the same in the evolutionary worldview. So this message is to Christians on evolution, but it's also to the evolutionist, to somebody who will listen. And so I will try to keep it as brief as possible and address Darwinism. I believe there is zero proof for Darwinism. I know there's no proof for it. I know it. I understand the theory quite well. I have read The Origin of Species. I know that that is a 1859 published rather old work, and the theory has been added to and expanded greatly since the very racist Charles Darwin wrote it. I mean, an extremely racist man, just not going full on ad hominem, but if you view this man as anything other than an absolute white supremacist, you're wrong. But since his codification of his ideas, and he wasn't the very first to believe that such things were possible, I know the view has undergone some real revamping. And in Darwin's day, which is just at the start of the Industrial Revolution, the technology was not there, and it was a little more understandable how someone could believe the kind of things that he believed. Since Darwin's day, we have had an explosion of the ability to map the genome, to view the DNA double helix, to, do all of the development that legitimate sciences have done. They have not done it in the pursuit of Darwinism. They've done it in the pursuit of medicine. They've done it in the pursuit of, some sort of physician's work in neurology or some other thing. It's not because we want to prove how, creatures evolved. Evolutionists might tack on to legitimate sciences, but evolution is not a legitimate science. It is a philosophy. It is an ideology. It is a worldview. And that's what I want to interact with, because there are no proofs for it. Proofs are things that cannot be denied, that are testable, that are measurable, that are falsifiable, that are substantiated by those things that feed into the scientific method. And nobody's ever observed evolution. Ever. I know this because I've interacted on it thousands of times, and every time I ask, I get the same idea. I get bacterial studies where bacteria stay bacteria. I get studies about finch beaks in the late 19th century or the mid 19th century with Darwin down in the Galapagos, where finches stayed finches. I get stickleback studies of types of fish where the fish stayed sticklebacks. And there's absolutely no change in what we call in taxonomy kind. All right, so there's no proof of a change in kind. And that's what's needed to substantiate the philosophical claims of Darwinism. Darwinism demands that species gradually, over time, through successive slight modifications, can and do radically change the DNA of creatures. And so protists from bacteria, from the amoeba, the single-cell organism, going backwards or going forwards beyond the protists to some sort of fish creature, to reptiles and our other kinds of mammals, to primates, to modern man, that kind of change, that kind change has happened over millions or billions of years. Usually, and it doesn't take billions, it takes millions or tens or hundreds of millions, they say. to do, but that it has happened. Nobody's observed that. Nobody has ever observed it. And so you have a theory, you have an idea, but you have no proof of it. So for the evolutionist Christian, this is very valuable to remember when you debate this. It's, you got to try to bring them down the level of the argument, because their level of argument is simply a rhetoric that leads them to use words like fact and certainty and observed and science. And everybody loves the term science. It's been so hijacked these days to mean so many dangerous things. And I think that's a lot of cross-pollination. So because we have great advancements in science with technologies and in medicine and in other actual legitimate sciences, pseudosciences like biological Darwinism can tack on to that and pretend like it has anything to do with their philosophies when it doesn't. But there's such advancements in A, B, and C, why not advancements in D? But there are no advancements in D, which are evolution, because they aren't. It's not a legitimate science. It's a philosophy, it's a worldview, and nothing else. So it is simply an opinion. And to help someone understand that is not easy to do, but it's necessary, because we need to help people understand that they are not talking from fact, and anybody in a worldview of religion is speaking of mere faith. You can't polarize faith and science. God doesn't do that. Legitimate sciences don't do that. We will do that with pseudosciences and science fiction like evolution. So here's really a challenge that I need to give and I need to try to articulate. And forgive me for speaking a little fast, because I'm trying to keep this brief, because I know most people, this is very hard to endure. Very many people believe evolution very strongly. It is a cult. It is a worldview. People have never seen it. They believe it. They mock those who do the same with religious worldviews like mine. As a Christian, I believe that the earth is not billions of years old. It's somewhere between 6 and 10,000 years old. I believe that Satan, a fallen angel, did speak in the Garden of Eden, and the serpent is associated. I don't believe that the serpent's lips are articulating words. That is not what the text demands. I believe in a worldwide flood with Noah and God sending animals on the ark. I believe in a miraculous God. As a Christian, with my worldview, God made the heavens and the earth. Trust me, He can do miracles. He can walk on water. Christ did raise again from the dead. These are things that don't normally happen. That's why we call them miracles. But they did happen, and the God who made it all can do it. Now, I have no problem saying that Christianity is not just a matter of fact. Study it, and then you got it. So, Christ did rise again from the dead. I do believe that's a historical fact. But just even if you affirm that, it doesn't mean you become a child of God. That is a total, unmerited, unconditional grace based on God's election and His sovereignty. And it is not based on study. It's based on grace. So I don't present Christianity as a fact that if you merely check the block on, you're now a Christian. Like the evolutionist says, look at our evidence, you must be an evolutionist. Okay, so again, this is just an ideology. It's just a worldview. And people hold to it very, 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 very strongly, I know. And they will recite their dogmas, and they will blindly, with passion, fight you for things they have never seen. 99.999% of evolutionists have never dug up a bone. They have never been in a laboratory at all. They have never, they don't even know how to read the research that has been done to try to purport the worldview. They've read popular apologists. They've listened to their favorite apologist. And so, because they like the argument, and I believe that evolution, nobody'd believe it unless we lived in a fallen world where people wanted to rebel against God, and this worldview gives license to all forms of immorality. There's no ultimate stance of morality if there is no God, and if we all just evolved from the zoo. That's why people believe in evolution. It's not an intellectual thing alone. It is a religious thing. It is a spiritual thing. But that's my worldview as a Christian. And people hold this evolutionary worldview very strongly. But here's where I want to challenge it. And I ask my evolutionist friends to let's debate this. Let's see if you can bring up any proofs that will help us to move beyond the level of ideology or philosophy that I assert you purport to some level of fact. You have a creature that breathes water. Now, this is not fiction. This is what every evolutionist I've interacted with believes, that life began somewhere likely in some form of water. Darwin didn't really get there in his book, but there's some speculation from his works that maybe if you have the proteins and you have some lightning or something, you have some volcanic activity, you know, life can spontaneously arrive out of non-life. But again, he lived in an age before microscopes like we have today that can examine life and see the intelligence and the genius passed on in the cells, in the DNA, trillions of them in every species that exists. And so he could believe that a blob could be a blob and didn't understand what we do today. So science has antiquated Darwinism, in my understanding. The very weight of legitimate science has done away with it. Now, it is an antiquated idea. But anyway, his view was that life began, and most evolutionists will say this, depends on your denomination, but some are panspermiasts and asteroids must have brought life to the planet. Others would say it can spontaneously arise in a puddle. Depends on your denomination. But most would say it can just happen on its own, which is impossible. We know that. That is unscientific and has never certainly been demonstrated. So there alone, you could camp out and show the evolutionist worldview to be unscientific. Hence, on the level of mere philosophy, rhetoric, ideology, worldview. It's no more factual than the Christian view. In the sense that if you just look at the facts, you must believe it. I would say that of Christianity, but again, affirm the grace nature of it, the supernatural nature of it, all day long. But so let's not camp out there, though, that life cannot arise from non-life. That's scientifically proven. That's factual, folks. The egg came second. That does away with evolution entirely. You have to have a creator. We could camp out there all day long. You have to have a fully formed chicken to ever have an egg. You have to have a rooster and a chicken to ever have an egg. So the chicken and the rooster came first, not the egg. So scientifically speaking, it's on our side in creation. So anyway, we could camp out there all day long. And literally, that's not childish. That is factual, necessary affirmation. With what we observe, you have to have the chicken before the egg. That's observable, repeatable, testable, non-subject to error, scientifically valid fact I've just levied against the evolutionary position that would say otherwise. But here's the specific challenge. You got a creature in the water. It's breathing water. It has gills, some form of processing the oxygen that oxygenates its blood, its life, through gills, through salt water. Presumably, this is the evolutionary origin. And let's just say that to go from breathing water to breathing air, there are 500 necessary changes biologically in that creature. Now, let me add a parenthesis here. It's more like 500 billion. Okay? End parentheses. We know that, well, let me continue it. We know that when it comes to changes in things, that it's not just a simple thing. There are billions of proteins, processes, information that go into making up you and me. And the DNA, the mRNA, the way that our cells reproduce and create the cells in our body is so complex that it's not a simple process for any change to occur. It just doesn't happen, and nobody believes it happens overnight entirely. It's numerous successive slight modifications that is the basis of Darwinism. So back to my example. 500 things, just to make it simple, that have to change to get a creature that has gills to start in the future ever being able to breathe oxygen out of the water, not in the water, to breathe it from the air. Fish die when you take them out of the water. A creature with gills will die when you bring it out of the water. A creature that breathes air will die if you put it in the water. Okay, it won't breathe. It can't process the oxygen out of the water if you have lungs, and it can't process the oxygen out of the air if you have gills, right? So this creature that's in the water, you know, X years ago, is breathing water, and it needs 500 changes to occur before even one part could begin to develop what's necessary to breathe air. Now, what the evolutionists cannot demand or show with any proof is what changes first. Why does it change? What exactly is the order of the changes necessary? And why would it ever do it? Okay? If you don't have a fully formed lung, then the, just make it simple, man. I mean, the skin that is closed, that has no hole for air to even get in, doesn't ever form. So the holes that would process the air have to be formed for those holes to connect. You have to have an input for the air to ever connect to any internal part of that creature to begin breathing air. So why would the hole ever form? It is of no benefit to the creature. The hole is of no benefit. There's no co-option to a hole that connects to nothing. Now you cannot, listen, stop. This destroys the evolutionary view. You cannot call this childish. You cannot call this silly. All I'm doing is taking the view of the Darwinist. And I'm looking at specifics. 500 changes, it's more like 500 billion, but 500 changes that have to occur in that creature for it to go from breathing water to breathing air. How does it ever start under the water doing it? Which part happens first? The external? The internal? I mean, how do you do that? How would it ever start internal? If it ever started outside, how? You have to have 500 parts, so 499 still to come, or it's a useless adaptation. How does the creature survive long enough to pass any part of that to the next generation? These are answers we need answered. This is not, oh, billions of years. That doesn't work. Because billions of years reduces down to every second of every day of every generation. Did you catch that? Let me say it again slower. Billions of years, or millions, reduces down to every single generation. Okay? So in every single generation, you have to have a microcosm of the macrocosm you're purporting of billions of years of changes, numerous, slight, successive. So in any one generation, it is impossible and unscientific to affirm that any part of 500 would spontaneously begin to develop with no advantage to the creature in developing them. Your theory is now done. And I could go on at absurd levels to demonstrate how the other 499 parts similarly will not change. And so we do have what many scientists have come to understand as a form of what we call irreducible complexity. So I'm a soldier, and I've fired many weapons in my life. If you take an M4, which is a, you know, semi-automatic rifle, 5.56, 7.62, whichever. It's got many components. Springs, levers, little gears, the magazines, little clicks, trigger, the muzzle, the flash suppressor part, you know, the sights, the stock, the, you know, inside you can pull out the bolt, you got the firing pin, you got the cotter pin that holds the firing pin into the weapon, you've got the ports, you got the gas exhaust, you've got all of these components, and then the bullets that go in, etc. You've got all of these working parts that if the firing pin is gone, the gun will not fire. You can have 499 parts out of 500 in that gun. You can have everything except the firing pin, pull the trigger. Nothing's going to happen. That's why evolution is unscientific. And I say unscientific because nobody's ever observed this. Ever. Okay? So when you just take this argument, why does a creature under the water ever go to breathing air and how? It shows the impossibility of evolution. And now we can disprove any sort of claims to proof because there's no answer for this. Zero. And there never will be. So we can now say, so you've got an idea from which you're arguing just like me. Welcome to the table. But you have no more fact than anybody else. You have no other type of argument than an argument. You can call it science versus some other views, but you're not talking science now because it's not observable. I mean, let alone the process of evolution takes millions of years. Who's lived long enough to observe that? The theory was just published formally in 1859. What kind of changes you observed there? So again, now just this level of argumentation has never been argued by or answered by the Darwinist. I've asked hundreds of times. There's no answer. It's just, ha, you think that's how it works? Yes, I think it is. But most of them have never studied it. So I invite dialogue to anybody who has. Bring it. You show me the science of this. I want something I can see and test. I don't want to take your word for it. This should be easy. You got facts. I just want one. I don't need two. I just need one. Okay? I don't need three facts from you. I just need one. So since you don't have any, just understand that you come to the table like anybody else with a worldview from which you will utilize certain facts to argue for your worldview, and I'll show you how those don't point the direction you want them to. You've got the wrong worldview. I'll show you how those facts point toward the Christian worldview, and I fully come to the table as well, just like you, saying that I've got this and you've got wrong, but that's the only thing you can say back. So this is very helpful to the Darwinist to do. So there are various proofs, I'm looking at my time right now, that I briefly want to address. And in the description to this message, when I post it, I need something to interact with evolutionists on, and I wanted to record this today. I used to have a lot more on my website about this, but in 2020, I decided to remove almost all of the videos and audios on my website, biblicia.com. I did it to just freshen things up, you know. And so I pulled like 1,000 audio messages and like half that many videos down. You know, they're old videos, old audio, you know, bad recordings, scratchy, you know, etc. So I just, and to save some money in size and storage, I just decided to do that. But I wanted to record something to have to give to my friends to show that we do understand what you're saying. And we challenge it because it doesn't make any sense, because it is not scientific. You keep saying it is, but I don't see any science here. And this simple argument is not simple. It is simple to present, but it's not simple. It goes to the heart of what you believe, and I've just demonstrated how it doesn't work. At least you have no facts for it. You can assume it works, but you have no facts to support it. Google away. Go ahead. And again, I invite the dialogue on it. So the most definitive proof that I keep getting given is a bacteria study. There's the Darwin's finches thing. That Darwin went to the Galapagos, you know, sailed down there on a beagle named the Beagle, I think it was, and he observed some birds. And I don't know how many times he went back to it, I don't recall. But he supposedly studied that there were certain seasons where when the floodwaters were higher, a certain type of beak in a bird that had that type of beak, that they would flourish, they would reproduce more, that they could reach to certain seeds and access them and live, and so pass on their genes by having other finches of their type. And those finches would survive more, they'd be more available, and the others would die out. But you know, when the waters went away, the same thing would happen. It could happen to any species of finch in the Galapagos. I mean, it was a seasonal thing. That was it. It's not conclusive of any change in DNA at all, of course. So, I mean, that study is just irrelevant. It doesn't teach a change of kind. The finches were still finches. And so you can have a bulldog and a shih tzu and a German shepherd, they're dogs. You can have a Bengal tiger and a tabby cat, they're both canines. That's the kind. And you can have a black man and a white man, and they're both humankind. Very different looks and things in their genes, but they're 100% the same creature. So it doesn't prove anything of anything. You can't just say 1 + 1 1 billion times equals a billion by the same process I just demonstrated about the creature under the water. They don't change, and we've never observed it. So I understand that one. I'm giving that one a lot. There's a one other one about a type of fish that interact, but the most common one I keep hearing, and these things are cyclical, they come around with popular apologists, is a study of bacteria, where there's a table, and on the table there are, if you're looking at it from the top, varying levels of antibacterial material and stuff that the bacteria can feed on and actually propagate and grow. And from the outside to the inside, there are these varying levels of bacterial possibility. And bacteria were placed on the outside of the table, and naturally as they propagate and multiply in the way God designed bacteria to do, they would move inward. As they moved inward, there is a change to some structure parts of the bacteria. They become resistant to the antibacterial material. And at the end, on the inside of the table, you know, on the outside you had bacteria, and I don't know how long they let it sit. It wasn't years, you know, it was days, kind of a structure. I read the study and saw the parameters, etc. And it's pretty easy to do. And on the outside of the table were these bacteria. And when they zoomed in on the inside of the table, so after the propagation, the time had elapsed and they just let it sit, when they zoomed in, there were little mice that had formed. No, there weren't. They were still bacteria. The bacteria started as bacteria and stayed bacteria throughout the whole study. And that's it. And some people who are looking for proof for evolution will cite this. This has been something tossed my way. I got sent the article. I had not heard of this specific article. But there are other controlled experiments like this that are done, and in a very controlled environment with intelligence acting upon things, there are attempts to demonstrate through electricity and through various applications of chemicals some change or adaptation to something that is then touted as evidence for evolutionary faith. Again, a big challenge there because while we observe that, we never observe a change in kind. What's purported is the change in kind. So the 500 steps that we're talking about in the fish that is under the water and breathing never begins. It never starts. Bacteria stay bacteria. They feed on bacterial matter. The certain bacterias die and they develop based on what they're eating, certain characteristics. If you or me were placed in an environment where we could only eat meat, the same changes would be observed. You know, or if you're placed in an environment where you can only eat fruit, there would be changes in you. There would be minor alterations of things within the genome, and you would pass on to the next generation some of those things and nothing else. There's no change to the DNA. There's no change in the creature at all that changes its kind. It's not enough to have speciation. Speciation is not evolution. It is adaptation. It is acquiescence. It is minor changes like thickness of hair or skin colors that can be passed on, even though that's always not, it's interestingly enough, not a hard and fast rule. Sometimes heterozygosis is possible, and people will give birth to very different looking children. It has happened. It's rare, but it can happen. And that because we have that possibility in all of us, Adam and Eve were heterozygotic, we can produce all the species in mankind, but you will never be able to mate a Labrador and a human being. You're never going to be able to do that. Why? Because creatures don't change in their kinds. So these are the kind of arguments that are leveled as evidence of something. And this is partly why people believe it. But I'll finish with this. I honestly think that people don't believe evolution because of the facts. They believe it because they don't want to believe in God. That's it. And you could argue the same, that some people really just don't want to believe that life is so random, and so they believe in the existence of some deity out there. You could argue that same way. But that, you know, in reverse, but that is what the evolutionists are doing. And at the center of my culture, of all the rot that is American society, where we've got sodomites crying over babies that were born not to them, but to some other schmuck of a woman who gave up her child for them, bore that child for them. And we are so wicked, we let them take that kid home. Or the insanity of transgenderism, which is a useless phrase because you can't change your gender. If you look at the insanities of the sexual immorality of my culture, the spring break hookup Tinder grinder culture, where people are so wicked that they view sex like a handshake. You know, you're just an orgasm to me, another human being. That is why people buy evolution. Because there's no accountability. And if you're not accountable, if you can pretend you're not accountable to God, because you don't change anything, this is my worldview talking, you're just pretending, then it gives license to anything. Anything you want to be, do, or say, nothing above you, nothing beneath you. Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. Amazing Beatles music, and that's stupid paganism in one of them, undergirding that. That's evolution. And people love that, because then it's selfism. It's the worship of self. And don't we naturally have a narcissistic culture that really just tells you you're the bee's knees, man? You are the bee's knees. Even if there was a God out there, clearly he loves you because you're so awesome. You can do anything. You are the center of everything. Pretty much. And so doesn't evolution just feed into that? You're just an evolved primate. You know, we have a common ancestor with chimps and bonobos, and that's why they still exist and we do, because we descended from some common creature differently than they. You know, I understand evolutionary philosophy. I do. It's masquerading as science. And I love to pull it down to its proper proportion. All they've got is bacteria studies where bacteria stay bacteria. And that's like the most advanced, by the way. They've got birds that stay birds. They've got fish that stay fish. And wild-eyed, ridiculous theories. And nothing else. Christian, do not be afraid of evolution. Do not be afraid to engage. Simply engage on the levels of the impossibility of its alleged undergirded assumptions of numerous successive slight modifications being able to change a creature from breathing water to breathing oxygen, and then walking upright, and then really, I really think this will help. I know I said I'd finish a second ago. Let me just give you this. I went to the beach today for the first time since moving to the state of Florida. I went to the beach where I proposed to my wife almost 20 years ago. For the first time in 20 years. Since I proposed to her, I've not been back. And in that time, I now have 4 children. My oldest will be 16. My youngest will be 10 or 9 this month. Shoot. You know, when all 6 of us went to the beach and we just had a time. The water is so beautiful. We moved to the Gulf of Mexico for a reason. And just had a great day. But you know, if I spent every day because I wanted my children to be able to enjoy the ocean in the water, I will not pass to them a gene that begins to thin out their bones to be able to sustain the pressures in the ocean. They will never be able to breathe water because in one generation, those changes that supposedly lead to that will never begin because there's no point and advantage to them ever beginning. And so it's a ridiculous idea. So if you just take evolution into the future, it can help reveal the ludicrousy of the past. And so if I ask the evolutionist that if I were to go down to the water today and move to the beach, and I just stay in the water, I don't get out, what's going to happen to me? Well, you're going to shrivel up and die. You're going to get an infection. You're going to bloat. You're not going to survive. Yeah, but what if I impregnate a woman in the water right before I die? Do my, you know, and then my wife or that woman that was impregnated by me, look at my Christian worldview at work, brings that baby down to the water and never takes them out of the water. Now you got two generations, well, one point something, where I made this decision, you know, and just keeps them in the water. What's going to happen? That baby's going to die. They're not going to be able to reproduce. So what kind of stupid theory would say that that could happen? Because that's exactly what you're saying did happen. Or you might be saying, well, if you just stood next to the beach, you might begin to develop these things. If it was forced upon you, I don't know, global warming, maybe, which is also a hoax, makes you need to get into the water a lot more. I mean, you're breathing air, but it just changes even outside of the water into being able to go back into the water. Just take what they say happened in the past till now and take it from now to the future, and it illustrates the ludicrous nature of the assumption, doesn't it? Who would believe that suddenly, you know, okay, let's just take me getting in the water all the time and getting out enough to not bloat and die. And then I take my kids in the water just enough to not bloat and die. And they do it with their kids, and they do it with their kids, and they do it with their kids, and we get 500 generations. In the 500th generation, who is going to tell me that a child's going to, like, scratch on their left side and like, or behind their right ear, and suddenly you got a gill forming like some Kevin Costner-type stuff in Waterworld? There's a slit. Look, Dad, we're getting there. Great-granddad's vision. You laugh, and you should be, because I'm insulting your intelligence, because that's really stupid. And then in 5,000 more generations, if I just start it today, go to the beach, get in that water, if I just start it, if I just do it, and believe me, it was beautiful in that water today, man. It is July in Central Florida. It is hot. It's like a bath in that crystal clear water where we live. Ah, so lovely. I can't wait to go back. Neither can any of my kids or my wife. But anyway, if I just do it, 5,000 generations from now, my kids will be exploring the Atlantic underwater, breathing it. That's evolution, folks. And you can't laugh at that, because that's exactly how it happened, that we're now breathing air as Homo erectus. You can't laugh at it, but you should, because it's really dumb. So, yeah, I just wanted to end with that. I wanted to illustrate the bankruptcy of what they say by taking it to the future. And I promise the last thing I'll say, because I gotta go eat dinner with my lovely offspring and my wife. Are X-Men possible? Yo. Okay, not the telekinesis, not the floating, not the, you know, the Cyclops guy opens his eyes and blasts fireballs out. Okay, that's silly. But could, you know, the one dude that, like, shoots little porcupine quills out of his skin at will, is that possible? Is that just as the movies? And I know it's science fiction, so is evolution, but I know the movie is just science fiction. Is it just, quote, the next stage in human evolution, end quote, mutants? Why do I bring this up? Because the change between an amoeba and me is 1 billion times more ludicrous than a guy being able to shoot porcupine quills out of his skin. Evolutionists, you have to deal with this. You laugh at us because we believe in biblical accounts, and you think your ancestors were fish? Trust me, you got nothing to point to, but we believe in a God who is supernatural, who created the created order, and sometimes does miracles outside of that natural order when he chooses. You don't claim that, and you claim a system that yet is that ludicrous? So could a man develop wings that are 10 feet in span out of his back? Could that ever happen? The evolutionist has to say yes, and thank you if you would, because you just illustrated for me how this really is just another religious worldview. It's just another philosophy. It's just another ideology. And if you were able to endure this long enough, I think I've been talking for about 35 minutes right now, thank you. I invite dialogue and discussion. Walk me through how these changes could ever work. I want facts. I don't want opinion. I want something I can see and understand. I would like that. I welcome it. And thank you for hearing me out.